Welcome to All About APIs. On this podcast, you'll hear from seasoned API practitioners, product leaders, and architects on what it takes to successfully design, launch, and maintain APIs that unlock new growth opportunities. Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining. This is another episode of All About APIs Hangout. I am Buddha, your host and product evangelist at Tyc. Joining me today is Sedki. Hello, Sedki. Welcome to the All About APIs podcast.
Thanks for having me, Buddha. My name is Sedki Abushamala, and I'm a tech lead at Tyc, and I'll be joining Buddha as your co-host for All About APIs.
Thank you so much, Sedki. Lovely to have you here as well. But today's MVP, the star, the guest of our show is Matt Tanner. So hello, Matt. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. So my name is Matt Tanner. I am head of DevRel at Mosif, which is a API and product analytics tool that allows you to kind of go end to end from looking at the analytics all the way to actioning them. And I'm really excited to be here today and chatting with you guys on the podcast.
Glad to have both of you with me. So kicking things off, today's session is going to be all about API-led product growth and how Tyc and Mosif are enabling that in across different industries for different players in the market. Let's kick things off with definitions, as we usually do. What does API-led product growth mean? What does product-led growth mean? These are terminologies we've come across quite a lot in recent times. We've come across API first and all of these different terms. So let's start with dissecting some of those. And maybe Matt, you can kick things off with talking a little bit about what product-led growth means to you.
Sure. Yeah. So product-led growth, there's obviously a plethora of different definitions, but let me give you kind of how it boils down in the world of that I've been experiencing in terms of DevRel and really developer first type of stuff. So product-led growth in that type of scenario means something along the terms of really you have product-led growth and you have sales-led growth. So a very good way to see it right off the bat is to say, okay, if I go to a developer tool and it says I need to contact sales in order to even do a demo, that's not going to enable product-led growth. Whereas on the flip side, if you are going to a website and you know you go in, you log in, self-serve, maybe no credit card required, you can get in, start using it, you get these little bumpers that kind of push you in the right direction. Hey, step one, step two, step three, the marketing stuff that you see, the product is catered really, really well to the customer. That is a product-led growth type of strategy really in action. So, I mean, without putting out a large, you know, word by word definition, that's a good way that you can see is my organization going sales-led or is my organization going product-led? And, you know, if you can do end-to-end self-serve and have a good retention, meaning that it's great if you get people to sign up, but if they drop off right away, you know, there's where you can enable more product-led stuff of trying to push them back to the product. So bumpers such as, you know, a great thing that I see all the time is with Segment is a really great product where I get emails all the time if I'm doing something within it that says, hey, are you doing this right now? Here's some documentation to help you get a little further. That's product-led. Whereas sales-led is you log in and nothing's more disappointing as a developer than logging in and seeing, I really want to try this out, but I got to contact sales first. So yeah, that's kind of the high level of what it is. And we can go into that more, obviously, throughout the talk.
That's a pretty good introduction. And I think I do have follow-up questions before I get into that. Maybe Sedki, just to get your thoughts on the topic as well, because at Tyc, we've looked at product-led growth and we're also looking at API-led product growth, which is kind of the place that we sort of play in a little bit more, where we've got a little bit more focus on APIs. Do you think API-led product growth is a little bit different from product-led growth, or are they the same things with a different focus? What's your sort of take on that?
API-led product growth, right. So I think the biggest distinction is that it's, you know, the keyword APIs. So so Matt did a really good job putting you in the shoes of a developer. So as a developer, when I walk through a product, the product can be anything. A new bank can be some new SaaS software, can be some analytics tool. I don't want to talk to the sales team. I want to jump in and start using it. API-led product growth is the same thing from an API aspect. So imagine you're building a new platform, and then a requirement comes up that you need to accept payments within your platform, right? And so you're thinking now, well, how do I do this? APIs, of course. And so there's companies out there, I'm sure some of you listening have an idea of a company that jumps into your head that offer a payment solution as a service through the use of APIs or SDKs, which are essentially wrappers for APIs. And so that's the subtle distinction. It's interesting because if you look at it technically, there's a huge difference between clicking in and playing around with something versus integrating with APIs, as opposed to in terms of as a user, how do I get started, which it's essentially the same journey.
I'm sort of seeing some common themes coming out of each one of whatever you just mentioned here, where we are looking at things, themes of retention, we're looking at themes of conversion, we are looking at themes of user acquisition, we're looking at themes of expansion as well. So almost like taking an entire journey, if you look at, you know, how that entire workflow is going to work, that is essentially what we are trying to enable with. When we talk about well-implemented product-led growth strategies, that is kind of what we are looking at. That's the journey that we are taking together. So we've spoken a little bit about what this means to developers. Do you think if there are other players or roles, as you would have in product teams and organizations with, you know, product owners or the non-technical folks, but probably also part of the product teams, does this differ? Does this vary? Does this change what product-led growth or API-led product growth would mean for them?
If we look at a certain tools, like let's say API gateways like Tyke or analytics tools like Mosif, you actually really have three stages that you have with it. So you have the first stage, which is going to be the onboarding portion. That is usually going to matter to the developers because that's where you're going to be doing integration. It does matter somewhat to folks a little bit further in the process too, but I think that's easier to do because one of the toughest things to do usually with these products is integrate. Once you've got the integration there, you know, you can add your team in and start going, but that integration is key. It's tough to do because you have to do the right research. You need to have the right metrics and analytics in place to be able to test things. But, you know, usually a few small tweaks will actually allow you to bring in some really, really good metrics. So you might see that your actual conversion rate goes up quite a bit just by making a button more visible to go to the next step in the onboarding or making your API onboarding more easy. So there's onboarding. Then there's the next part, which I think is crucial for everyone that uses the product, which is the actual usage. I'm integrated. I've logged into the product. Where do I start? Okay. So that's that next step. So when you're looking at your user experience, what you don't want is, and I've logged into a few products lately where I do the integration, maybe I deploy it on AWS, I log in and I go, what's next? And if your customers or your users are asking, what's next? There's a problem. So that's the second kind of thing. But that could be experienced by developers using the tool, but it also could be experienced by the rest of the product team. Like in our case at Mosif, we actually deal with a lot of product teams that come in and want to build metrics dashboards and stuff like that. You don't want to throw people in. Like imagine opening up Microsoft Word and going, what do I do? Do I type? Like everyone, we know intrinsically what we're going to do because, you know, we're so used to it. But most products are not as ingrained in us as something like Microsoft Word or any type of text editor where we jump in, we start typing. That's kind of the middle step. And that's crucial as well. The last step is one that's actually pretty tough to track. So it's people have onboarded, they've used the product. How do I get them to return? So this is the retention piece. And there's two ways that people leave the product. Either they're done with the product, like I've set up everything that I can think of doing, or they get so frustrated with the product that they leave. And it's usually pretty easy to tell this type of thing. So if someone has come in and set up a few things, and let's just say they have some data flowing in and out of your tool, they've probably seen some value. Now, if someone has clicked around a whole bunch of times and then leaves without putting any data into the tool, what do you think probably happened? They probably got frustrated or they got confused, and they're probably not going to return back to the product. And that also factors into another thing where if someone has a bad experience with your product, the developer community and the product community is big, but it's also small in the sense that it's very easy for bad reputation to spread very quickly. That's part of that last step too of that retention. So onboarding, crucial, the usage of the product, and then you have this last chunk, which is making them return or figuring out why did you leave and how can we get you back? That means making sure you have the right analytics in place, which is what you can do. You know, usually what you're going to do is you're going to build out an analytics stack. So you're going to use something like Mosif to actually track like integration, what APIs are being used, all these types of things. But then you also probably still want to have like some type of APM, so application performance monitoring tool too, where if you see that for some reason, usage of your product is way, way down. And then you go and you look and you have a bunch of servers that aren't working and it's either causing massive latency or maybe it's causing full service disruption. You want to have this kind of plethora of analytics that you can pull on to make sure that you're validating the right stuff across all three of those steps.
Those are really, really good sort of foundational points on, you know, onboarding and what you're going to be doing and the retention aspect of things. So maybe let's take that as a baseline and think about, obviously, the two of us essentially operate on two different sort of aspects of making this all possible. We've got the API gateway and API management platform side of things, which again looks at how you can make APIs a lot more, you know, consumable almost with all of the different elements of API management that comes into play. And then you obviously look at how you take things a step forward with your monitoring analytics and getting the right insights into the product that you want to build or expand out. Setki, to take things forward, let's talk about the API management side of this part where we look at, okay, what does the API management platform bring to the playing field of API-led product growth in this case?
So it plays a couple critical roles. The first step is, so bring an API to the table, right? Let's assume you have that. The next thing is, how do I secure it? How do I make sure that I can publish it so people can access it, and then also provide clear documentation so my users will know how to use this thing? And then, of course, the final step is, how do I gather analytics about how my API consumers are adopting my APIs and, you know, integrating with tools like Mosif in order to build out all of these dashboards that allow us to get insight. So the first step, secure it. And so a lot of people will be coming from the place of, hey, we have legacy APIs, we have new APIs, we have different teams building different APIs with different authentication protocols. It's quite common, especially in large enterprises, but even in smaller teams where smaller companies where there's multiple teams and everyone's empowered to, you know, choose the right tools for their job and the right. But, you know, all that introduces complexity, the rise of microservices especially. And so with an API management platform, what you can do is you can not only centralize and normalize all of the endpoints, right? So you can take what every team is doing and then unify it. So it's not only is it central and easy to access from the perspective of the user, but you can hide all of the complex details about how to authenticate the APIs and all the different ways to do stuff and just simplify it into a single doorway. So we want to centralize our APIs that are being built, let's say, in a distributed environment. So now that they're secure, we make sure that all of our API consumers enter through a single doorway. Because we can now place a bouncer at that doorway, what we can do is, in addition to the security, now we can publish all of our APIs to a developer portal, right? And so for an API management platform like Tyke, we have a developer portal that you can publish your APIs to, and you can accompany those API products on your developer portal with the right documentation. So if you're a Rust shop, you can add OpenAPI specs and users will be able to view all of the OpenAPI specs, the Swagger sandboxes, and click around and see the endpoints and start to get a model map of how they want to integrate with your APIs, in addition to all of the static content that you would write. If it's GraphQL, they would get the GraphQL playground, and they can, you know, play around, make a couple query example queries in a sandbox environment, get some dummy data back. And like Matt said, the critical onboarding stage, they can start integrating and playing with the APIs to get an idea of how to build them. And so I think this is quite critical. I think Matt, you did a good job explaining from the user perspective how documentation enables onboarding. And we've certainly seen how good documentation will help a user understand how your APIs can be used within their use case. And we've seen how a lack of documentation will certainly turn off developers. And so you got to place yourself in their shoes. The only other thing with step two of what Matt mentioned with usage is you have to ask yourself, in a self-managed environment, if I have a product that I still want to grow, perhaps with the use of APIs, how do I gather those metrics? And I suppose that's where good customer success engineering comes in, right? We have to step in and have the conversations with our customers to say, how are you using the product? Are you getting the value out of it? Because what's next, Matt, you asked, that is critical. It's huge. And the thing is, with Microsoft Word, as we open it up, we know what we're going to do, right? It's opened up for a purpose. But if your product is large, let's say you're selling a platform, How do you enable your users to get to maximize the value that they're getting out of it? It's quite a difficult thing. And of course, you know, putting the right workflows in place to make sure that users not only get to Hello World, but then get to all the other branches off of that is quite critical. And I'm curious, you know, how Mosif enables that. With Tyke, with API Management Platform, we give you, it's, you can think of it as a Swiss Army knife, right? There's all the tools, there's the access, there's the securing, the publishing, and then the ability to capture analytics, pipe that over to Mosif and other analytics tools and be able to view that in a dashboard. It just becomes up to you and your API owners to capitalize on that.
This sort of brings us back to the primary objective. Really think about it from a business's perspective. Obviously, we've been talking about the technical aspect of things and the product teams, but if you really look at the business objective of what does growth mean for a business, and typically that would, people would say, increase of revenue. We want to make more money. We want to get our product in more hands, and that could be done in a few different ways. You might be launching new services and products, and you know, this might be complementary to whatever you might already have. You might be adding new features and functionalities, and how quickly you do that might result in, you know, how much money you might be making in a, over a period of time. You might be looking at expanding out across multiple regions and spaces, and you want to acquire customers and get more people involved in using your product, adopting your product, and making it a core part of their overall infrastructure and tech stack. So if you look back at the overall objective of what we as a business would want from our growth strategy, this all sort of fits in really, really nicely, because then when we talk about, you know, if you have to launch a new product or a service, what do we actually want? We want to have the foundations rightly done and produced, which is, you know, you need to make sure that things are not only fast and easy, but it's also securely done. It is available, it is accessible, it is cataloged properly, it is documented properly, it is self-servicing. And that's where your new product or service is going to be successful. Equally, we need to think about, you know, things like monetization. How easy can we make it for people to actually use your product, potentially pay for that product, and therefore reduce the number of clicks and potentially hops needed to make that purchase or make that sale. And you know, there's not a whole lot of distance between the product and selling or buying. So in the ideal world, things would be a lot more seamless. Obviously, not everyone does things very, very easily and very, very seamlessly. And equally, when we think about acquiring new users, especially when we think about expanding into new regions, It is critically important to understand what the users are really looking for, understand what they are liking, what they are not, what they are disliking specifically. And based off of that, you can make more decisions. Based off of that, you can maybe even discontinue segments of your product and focus specifically on things that are really working. This, interestingly, even though not a tech product, this is kind of the origin story of McDonald's, because McDonald's started off with selling a whole bunch of things initially, and then they realized that four or five things on their menu, including, I think, the cheeseburger and milkshake and a couple of other things, were the only things that were leading to 80 to 90% of the revenue, and they just went with that. So being able to identify things like that is almost critical for the success of a business, success of a product. And with that, obviously, API management, API gateways as an entry point to all of that, in terms of shaping of the traffic, in terms of identifying and recording some of the information, making that security possible, are incredible in terms of that initial journey, that the glue that holds everything together. But that's where also the extension of that comes in with Mosif. And that's where I bring you in here, Matt, where you're looking at that extended area where you are enabling organizations, product teams to make better decisions that is going to actually enable and fuel their growth strategy. So tell us a little bit more about that element of how Mosif makes that possible.
Yeah, sure. I think there was one thing also that you mentioned that was really good about, you know, how do you improve a product? So you're going to have qualitative and quantitative metrics. Yep. Okay. When we're talking about Mosif, okay, so let's think about any analytics tool, whether it's Mosif or whether it's any other way that you can get aggregate a bunch of data and then take a look at trends. It tells a good chunk of the story, but it doesn't tell everything, because it doesn't tell the emotion behind that. For instance, if I'm trying to onboard, let's say I have an endpoint called slash register, and that's my onboarding endpoint. And I see that, you know, 90% of my users don't log in, like are able to access that endpoint, no problem. And I have 10% that can't. I might look at that and go, okay, all right, well, that's pretty good. You know, 90% of people are making it through. I'm looking, okay, those people are getting 401 errors. They just obviously don't know how to use that endpoint. You could forget about those users, But it actually, you're missing a business opportunity, probably an easy to fix business opportunity, but you're also missing the fact that, you know, as you grow out in revenue and as you grow out in a user base, that 10% becomes a larger actual customer base. You know, when you're talking about, let's say 100 customers, then you lose 10 of them versus you have a million customers and you're losing 100,000 of them. That's a big gap. So when we're talking about scalability, you want to look at that. Now, how do you figure out what's actually wrong? Well, the first indicator is going to be those metrics. Okay, we see a lot of 401s. Maybe you see a lot of 500s because for some reason your server stability is just not good. Nothing kills a product faster than having something that's not stable or doesn't scale well. So how do you get those metrics? Like you pipe them over from Tyke into something like MOSIF. You check it out. Okay, we know we have errors. We see 90% are moving to the next step, but we don't necessarily know what's going on. Send a survey. Actually, send a survey to absolutely everybody. So what you should do is you should ask. One of my favorite ways of doing it is if you have a free trial, let's say a 14-day free trial, what you might want to do is you want to send an email at the end of that trial based on two things. Did they sign up? If they signed up, you want to know what their favorite parts of the product are. You want to uncover why they signed up. Now, if you send them a survey at the end and you realize they haven't signed up, you want to ask them a different thing. What did you like about the tool? But also, you know, you want to figure out why did you not continue to use the tool? Why are you not signing up with us? And if they say something like, hey, look, I tried to use the tool for 2 days. All I got was 401s. You know, the product didn't work for me. Okay, great. That's actually, when we're talking about product-led growth, that's great because you can take that feedback back to the product, iterate on the product, improve it, and then push it back out. And hopefully you can start to get that onboarding flow or whatever part of the product that's not working well, improving. Another thing that I would do is quarterly or maybe every 6 months, what I would do is I would send out a user survey, whether you do it to power users. So if you're tracking, let's just say usage of your platform, maybe you send it out to the top 25% of users and you say, hey, what do you like and what do you dislike and what could we improve? And you'd be surprised. I mean, I've done this at a few companies where we send out surveys and you think no one is going to answer this, but they do. And you don't need a whole lot of feedback to start to see trends. So, you know, let's just talk about Tyke, for instance. If we send out a survey, ask what do people like, and they say, I really, really love how easy it is to set up rate limiting quotas, which it is easy to do in Tyke. But let's just say they really, really liked that aspect of it compared to other products. Well, that's great because now you can use that knowledge from a marketing and from a product perspective of promoting the product and say, hey, look, here's why users love us and here's why you're going to love us too. And then maybe you look at your onboarding flow. Maybe you have a 14-day onboarding checklist type of thing. Well, one of those things that you're going to want to call out is going to be rate limiting and quotas and implementing them. Or you build a quick little guide on it and then send it out to people that are newly into the platform. And this is how you can bring value. Because what it's really about at the end of the day is getting that customer from zero to value as fast as possible. And usually, you know, with most products, developers have a really small amount of patience. So you usually have like 5 to 15 minutes, okay? If someone is logging in and not getting value in, like, let's say the onboarding, like you have to configure this, and, you know, it's taking a half an hour to an hour in order to get a small proof of concept working, that's going to be too long. This is why you look at the most successful programming frameworks and you look at the tutorials around them, you're talking about building stuff in 15 minutes. So I would suggest, you know, if you do have a product or you have an API, ask what people like about it, what they don't like about it, actually use that. Don't send out a survey just so it looks like you care. Ask like four questions. What's your favorite part about the product? What have you had challenges in the product? What would you improve? And then how likely would you be to recommend this product to other developers? If they say 5, you got an improvement. If everyone's around 8 or 9, hey, you know what? People are getting value from it. It's a simple, what you want is simple things that people can click and really easily type some stuff. Don't put like 10 or 15 questions. Same thing goes for your onboarding flow when you're chatting about the first signup page. Don't ask like 50 things. Ask a couple things that matter to you and then leave it at that. It seems like an old school way to send out a survey and then expect people to fill it out, but there's two people that will fill out that survey. people that absolutely love it, people that hate it, because they want to tell you how crappy your product is. and that's what you want. You want to get that feedback, right? Because you want your product to be the best it can possibly be. And who better to tell you that than customers who really love it or really had a difficult time with it?
It's that little balance, right? You've got, we always come across this 80-20 rule at every single time, the 20% leading 80% of growth. So understanding and identifying what that part is of your product that is really going to sell, that you should be talking more and more about and showcasing more, that is what you want. And that's where you need to have that right balance of, okay, how are you shaping traffic? How are you putting acquiring users, as well as understanding and monitoring and analyzing exactly what they might be doing and you know, understanding what they are liking and disliking. Setki, in terms of the API management side of things, and of course, when we talk about security and governance and these underlying things, they are not considered the flashy stuff, the innovation driving, the digital transformation that we want. That's usually not what you would think. When you think about digital transformation, no. You don't think standards and compliances and security. That's not the case. However, these are quite fundamental to making all of that possible, because you can't have scalability without standardization. You cannot build that innovative building on top of that, essentially. In terms of just thinking about examples, Setki, do you have any examples around, you know, what you've seen out there in the wild in terms of organizations that are doing really well, how they've approached their API-led product growth journey almost?
People will come to me and say, hey, Setki, here's the problems that we're trying to solve. And it's, you know, it's, again, it's API security. It's how do we enable governance and make sure that developers are only doing what they're supposed to and all that. And I say, no problem. That's all built in. And so they go, great, help us solution it. We do that. They're in production. And then the next thing is, you know, what's next? And there's this entire world behind the very narrow scope that they're looking in, because we've now enabled you to get to production. But what's next is how do I grow this thing now that it's out there? And that's really where the fun starts. So, and I think that's where tools like Mosif can bring your data to life and give it a story. Because with Tyke, like we said, well, it does, you know, everything you would want it to in terms of securing your APIs and getting it out there, and then capturing the analytics, and now you have all this raw data. And so the question is, what do I do with this data? How do I make sense of it? And again, that's where really good tools like Mosif come in. But in the wild, just to get back to your original question there, Buddha. So what I've personally seen is people come to us also for the wrong reasons. And so it's not about API-led product growth. What's happening is developers want to do. They're developers. We're developers. And also, I'll say this: I've picked the wrong technologies because it's sexy. And so, in addition to people coming and saying we have security and governance and publishing and API growth requirements, and this is why we're interested, other people will say we're interested in using your Tyke operator because it's in Kubernetes. We do everything in Kubernetes. And so there's a big difference between a tech driver and a business outcome. And so the fundamental question that I will ask and is, so what are you hoping to get out of this? And that will very early on show you if somebody's doing this because it's sexy and it's cool and they want to, you know, pad the resume, versus an enterprise that has a real business goal to accomplish, such as growing their product through the use of APIs.
We have standards that are available at the moment, standards that are followed quite popularly around the world, which is, you know, we've got open banking financial services, you've got FHIR for the healthcare services. And to a lot of people, that is restrictive because it is setting out rules and standards, which you now have to follow and implement and do stuff. But I think a lot of people miss out the whole point of it. The objective was actually some form of standardization so that you can easily integrate and get access to data in a secure and reliable manner, which you can't do if you've got 100 systems, each one of which is going to be having their own set of rules that you need to adhere to. And every single integration is probably going to take you 3 to 6 months, and something of a middleware that you then have to maintain and manage. So again, I'm a big proponent of standards, as you might have noticed from this conversation. But just bringing the conversation back to what we were discussing previously, I'm curious, based on what I just mentioned, Matt, do you see differences in opinion and differences in approach when people talk about specific verticals? And specifically within those verticals, if they are looking to tackle challenges of, say, open banking or any particular kind of standards that they need to comply with, do you see any particular, you know, audit requirements or any particular thing that is required as part of their growth and expansion strategy?
let's look at it from the user side. Let's look at the value of, you know, what our tools can do to help the actual end users. So when we talk about the different requirements, obviously from an API gateway perspective, we're talking about security. We might be talking about compliance, like, you know, I need a tool that's SOC 2 compliant or SOC 2 type 2 compliant, or I need a tool that's HIPAA compliant. So first requirement usually is picking a tool that actually supports those types of standardizations or governance stuff that you need. That's the first kind of step. So if you're aiming for healthcare, you know, you need to have a HIPAA compliant product. And that is part of your API led or product led strategy, because in order to even fit in that segment, you need to have that credential. Okay. So that's the first thing. Then the next thing is, let's divide it up by in a couple different verticals. So you have financial vertical itself, but you also have different size companies. You could have a 5-person company, you have 500, you could have a 500,000 person company. Let's just say they're a monster company. They're going to have different needs when it comes to how to use that product. So that 5-person company is going to want, you know, maybe you have a free tier that they can log in, they can play around with it, see if it works. But then you have this 500 person company that they do need to talk to sales, because there's a lot, there's a security questionnaire, all of this stuff that they need to do. So you have to have that channel too. So then I'm just talking about the onboarding portion of things. You need to make sure that what happens is that within each of those verticals or each of those segments, you're supporting that from a compliance perspective. And you're also supporting it from like, hey, you know, I'm sure you've both been on sales calls before. There is a different vibe between chatting with a 10-person company and what their requirements are versus chatting with a 20-person group that's in a 100,000 person company, you know, like a large major bank or something like that. You know, Sedke and I have worked for very large organizations. We know the slog of it. It's different. We can't just hop in and say, hey, I'd like to sign up for MOSIF and start trying it out locally on my work laptop so I can see if it works. It generally just doesn't happen that easily. I mean, it does sometimes, but not always. So you have to have those different channels, and the requirements for onboarding are different. And then once you get in the tool, the requirements are different too. When we're talking about a large organization that's trying to really aggregate all of their APIs in one spot, they might have different challenges. For them, maybe it's something like, you know, whether it's internal user or external user, like internal API, external API, you know, we really want to standardize our security. And the reason number one is because we want to make it easier for users to use the product. So that's really the product led portion of it. It's not so much about like, everything has to link back to the user. Why are you doing this? What's the user benefit? Yep. If you don't have a user benefit to it, that's not really generating anything from a product led perspective. So you need to look at it and say, okay, you know, what features within the tool do I need to have for financial services versus what do I need to have for healthcare versus what do I need to have for government, or what do I need to have for a SaaS startup? It's going to be very different. A SaaS startup might be more concerned with onboarding. So your tool needs to be able to help them with that onboarding portion. Whereas if it's internal APIs, for you know, a government internal API, they might actually care more about errors. So they don't necessarily care about onboarding, because, you know, it's obviously great to have internal APIs be able to be easy to use. But if you have to use the API, maybe you want to improve it so that like the end customer is having a better experience. So they're looking at stuff like 400, 500 errors, especially 500s. If you're in government and you're getting 500 error, you could have a massive backlog of what's going on there, and your server infrastructure might be down, or maybe you had some type of you know, denial of service attack that brought down those servers.
Obviously, I think we're talking about potentially two sides of product usage. I think there's the product user side of things, and we want to make life a little bit easier on onboarding side of things. But equally, there are the product creators and the API providers, as we call it, where for them, the concern is still going to be about, you know, I'm going to get audited, because I need to be compliant with that. I need to have all of this information and data available. How do I make that possible? At the same time, make and provide a user experience that will still retain my customers. So how do you see that balance sort of working out as an API or, you know, as an API provider, as well as, you know, as a product owner for a particular product segment?
Yeah, so I guess it's really, when you talk about auditing and stuff like that, it's really about capturing as much data as you possibly can, and making sure that that data is easily readable and accessible. So when we do talk about something like most of, let's say like API auditing, for instance, you need to follow, you have some type of breach that's happened and you need to be able to audit that breach. So with Tyke, you know, you're going to be able to see like response, request payloads, all this type of stuff. That stuff can then be piped over into MOSIF. Now, whether you're looking at the product side of it, how can I make the product better? Or, hey, you know, I have this issue or this governance requirement, you'd be able to kind of investigate that in the same way, right? You're going to be looking at the steps that the user took to get there, whether it was malicious or whether it was unintentional or whether it was intentional. You know, you're going to be able to follow that stuff through. And then, you know, from the other side, you're going to be able to click on each of those payloads and see, you know, what happened here. If you had an audit, you know, let's just say financial audit that said like, hey, look, we're missing $50,000 and something went wrong within our APIs that caused that. How do we trace that through? Well, the first step is making sure that the analytics point of origin, which is going to be the gateway in this case, is recording that stuff and then making sure that the secondary step, which would be MOSIF, for instance, is getting all of that data. So,
right.
You know, I know it's, so the reason why I mentioned that it's not like when we're talking about API or product-led stuff, you have your user that's using like a product like Tyke, or a product like MOSIF. And it's kind of like a pyramid in a sense, because we actually are at the bottom of the pyramid building stuff up for people. So we care about how people are using our products. And we also want to enable people to our products to actually help people also do that for their products. So that's why it's kind of a tough question to answer, I think, in the sense that, like, you know, when we look at it, we're talking about how can people use our products? But, yep. And we talk about, you know, they can apply rate limiting and they can look at analytics dashboards, they can do behavioral emails, they can do all this stuff, but that's them using our products and how our products can interact with that. But then the next step up is figuring out what pieces in our products, so Tyke or MOSIF, enable that next level for them. So, you know, that's why it's a bit of a tough question to answer in terms of, you know, what would I do in this case? It's like, I know what we can do in the context of our products, but how do we use that in order to facilitate that next level of product or API led growth for our end users, for their end users? That, again, what's happening is, so we have products which are enabling API growth and the next level, they're probably exposing those APIs. Then the next level up is they have users that are using those APIs and they might be building some type of UI that's then used by a further user. So, you know, looking at that stack of things, you can see why what you want to do is figure out, you know, what those products that are in the bottom layer really allow you to build up to other stuff. So when you're in a specific segment, fintech, you know, health tech, you know, you are going to have a lot of these overlaps of what does my product do that does it for this, that does it for that, and moves its way up through that value chain. When it comes to product-led growth, customer support and contacting customer support should be kind of the last hill that they have to climb up. Because when you're looking at building out, you know, API led, so really digging into your APIs and trying to get that adoption, or product led, trying to get product adoption, you want things to be quick. So the quickest way to do that is automation. So being able to automate the fact that, hey, if someone gets a 401 10 times, they shouldn't have to send an email to customer support. They should get either an error message that shows them, hey, here's the error you're getting. Like Angular, for instance, you know, when you get an Angular error, you go into your console, you can click, it takes you to the docs page. That's great. That's what you should be aiming for. Or you should be sending an email to them and saying, hey, you know, you tried to log in 5 times, you haven't been able to, you can reset your password here, or here's a guide on how to, you know, how to send a request with a OAuth token. Right.
Setki, did you have anything to add to that in terms of, you know, just looking at vertical specific approaches to product growth? What does that sort of entail? And, you know, if would people be doing things a little bit differently when it comes to acquiring new users and their retention? Does the strategy change based on whichever specific vertical that they might be, especially when, you know, compliances and requirements are involved?
Yeah, no, I have a boring answer. In my experience, no. An API manager is strangely positioned in the space where it, again, it's a toolbox. It gives you all the tools you need to get from 0 to 100, where 100 is take your APIs, enable them so that we can drive adoption, whether the users are internal or external. And so the compliance requirements live at a level much higher than that, right? So yes. I think Matt explained that perfectly. So it doesn't matter. If you have HIPAA compliance, then you are on the hook for HIPAA compliance. If you're PCI, then you're on the hook for PCI. This is you can think of API management software as just another software that lives in your ecosystem. And so with Tyke, we don't do any phoning home whatsoever. And so for that reason, highly regulated companies in verticals tend to shift towards Tyke for that reason. So the only times that, in my experience with API management, where this comes up as a as an issue is if you're interested in purchasing SaaS API management vendors, at which point you do become at the mercy of, does this have these compliance requirements? Yeah, and we'd be happy to take your questions in that regard. You can send them to your local account manager, go to tyke.io and reach out.
Perfect. So I think we're going to bring the session to a close. It's been really, really interesting diving a little bit deeper into the world of API-led product growth and what that all entails. There are different elements of it. There's something core to it, and then there is the innovative foundational plus the exciting that brings it all together. And that's where we've got Tyke and most of us, the ultimate partnership to actually make it all possible. So just for closing, if you had to sort of provide one key takeaway from this talk, that if people forgot every single thing from whatever we spoke about over the last 30 to 40 minutes, what would you say that one critical element is that people should keep in mind when they are thinking about their growth strategy specifically? So I'm going to start off with you, Matt. What would be that one key takeaway?
Sure. I because we deal with metrics every single day at Mosif, I would say if there's one takeaway, it would be listen to the customers from a, you know, metrics perspective, but then also make sure you actually listen to that feedback to get the whole story. So a lot of times, you know, we find that we look at something, we make an assumption, we change it, and then, oh, it's actually not the change that we need. So the best way to validate that without wasting time, and really it comes down to being lean, is if you've got 5 customers that are experiencing a specific API error, go and ask them what it is. So use the first line of defense is actually detecting it. The second line of defense is figuring out what actually went wrong. And you might find that all 5 of those customers have different reasons that they got that. So now you have 5 fixes instead of just 1 fix that you have there. So that would be my takeaway, is qualitative and quantitative, and mash those together in order to get your refinement strategy, your build strategy, and your entire customer strategy.
Fantastic. Over to you, Setki, for closing statements and the key takeaway here.
Yeah, thank you. So with API-led product growth, so I've discussed everything that an API management platform like Tyke can do in order to get you from just having APIs to publishing them and allowing developers to consume them, ideally in the lowest barrier way possible. And as I've described these steps and features, the developer in you listening might have thought to yourself, well, I can build all this myself. No, you can't. So take it from me, I'm biased, of course, but having made the mistake and having seen users make the mistake and then come to us to try to unravel those mistakes, API management is quite a complex subject. It starts with your organization, absolutely. API design should be at the forefront of how your developers think about their APIs and think about their products and how APIs are fundamental to them as opposed to an add-on. However, to secure them, to publish them, to the security, the governance, the auditing, and then all the other stuff that you would expect, the plugins and the transformations and the GraphQL portions and all this kind of stuff. developer hours are exponentially more expensive than buying an off-the-shelf solution. Over to you, Buddha. Thanks for your time today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. My sort of closing statement here with my key takeaway would be that if you're looking at growth and innovation is always going to be built on the foundation of standardization and predictability. So take that home. I think you need that to be able to grow and innovate in an organization. So as boring as that sounds, that is the reality. And the other key takeaway for me personally is that I absolutely love talking about all things APIs, all about APIs. That is what this podcast is all about. And hopefully we'll be bringing more exciting sessions as we go along this journey together. Thank you so much, Matt, for that amazingly insightful session about API-led product growth and how MoSEF fits that bill phenomenally well and what it does for its customers. Thank you so much, Setki, for co-hosting this session as well and bringing all of that API management goodness to the conversation and how we are enabling things on our side with API-led product growth as well. So thank you so much. And that is the end of our session. See you next time. Take care and bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of All About APIs, powered by Tyke, a leading cloud-native API management platform for the modern stack. So come, empower your teams and put your devs in the driver's seat. If you want to find out more, visit us at tyke.io. And until next time, take good care of yourself.